Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall, and you're listening to episode 14 of the Downtime Podcast, where we take you inside the world of elite mountain biking. Before we talk to this week's guest, I just want to say a massive thank you to everyone that's been in touch. It means a lot to know that you're enjoying what we're doing and that you're learning something from the podcast. That's what it's all about for us, so it's really cool to know it's working. If you want to get in touch, then you can email us. We're info@downtimepodcast.com, or you can get in touch on social media. We're Downtime Podcast on Instagram, The Downtime Podcast on Facebook, and Downtime Tweets on Twitter. Okay, this week we've got another great guest for you. It's Polygon United Ride team rider, Kenta Gallagher. Kenta's got a super interesting background, coming from top-level XC racing, becoming a downhill privateer, and then finally going full factory this season with the Polygon United Ride team. Okay, without further ado, here's episode 14 with Kenta Gallagher. Kenta Gallagher, welcome to the Downtime Podcast. Thanks for coming on.
No, thanks for having me.
Awesome. So you've just come back from a pretty big block of racing. How are you feeling? Is it nice to be back at home and wind down a little bit?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, it's been pretty full on, to be honest, and I've been playing catch up. But, nah, so glad to be home and chill and just see my mates and my family again, you know?
Excellent. Thanks. Yeah, thanks for taking the time out to talk to us. We really appreciate that. Let's wind the clock back a little bit then. I don't know a huge amount about your background. How did you get into mountain biking in the first place? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. Well, basically, my dad was a keen runner, and he was like always into sports, you know, and he injured his knee and then was told by the physio to like just ride because it was like less stress on his knee sort of thing. And he did that. And then like there was a local race not far from Inverness and he went to that and was saying how amazing it looked and kind of dragged me and my sister along to it. And then we just like did the little kiddies race, like primary school kind of kids race. And I just vaguely remember like coming not first. And hating life. And then I just kind of went back to football and then kind of took a step away from it. But my sister always did it. So it's kind of always been in the family, but it was more like a family affair of the fact of it was a weekend away. Uh-huh. So we all went and camped or stayed in a hotel and just made a weekend with the family.
And so in the early days for you, it was more about the cross-country side of things. Is that right? Or
yeah, I guess like, well, basically, like, I did my first downhill race in 2006, and I think I did, like, two races in Scotland, because I got a downhill bike for my birthday, no, Christmas. And then I didn't really do much in the in terms of that, because, Scottish Cycling had a programme for the cross-country, but not the downhill. So then I kind of got, like, not pushed to it, but that's the kind of direction I went, because I didn't come from a really rich background and I couldn't go to all the downhill races and it was pretty expensive, but Scottish Cycling made the programme for like youths and juvenile sort of kids to go through the ranks and try and get onto British Cycling sort of thing. So it was like a feeder sort of way through. So just by opportunity, I went with cross country, but I always did love the downhill when I was younger. I just never, well, yeah, as I say, it was quite hard for my parents to pay for XC and the downhill. So I had to kind of choose one.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And so the cross-country side of things, you know, that progressed pretty well for you. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, how you worked your way through the sport and where you got to with the cross-country side of things?
Yeah, well, basically, like, in 2006, I think I got onto the Scottish Cycling Programme, and then 2007 was kind of the year that I started taking it pretty serious, like training camps and getting the opportunity to do the British races. And then I think I was doing quite well. So in 2008, I won British Youth Champs on the XC and then got chosen to do juniors with the Junior Development Programme with British Cycling. And they kind of give you a little bit of money and take you to the World Cups and kind of like ease you into the World Cup scene. So it was pretty straightforward that way because everything was done for you and they just booked your flights. You didn't pay for anything, you know, so it was like a big help. So I just kind of went through the ranks, and from junior you go to academy, which is then full-time. So you're full-time from about 17, so, and then moved to Manchester where they're based. So I kind of just went through the ranks in that way, and then ended up, yeah, being full-time bike rider and just thinking it's like the best thing in the world, like not working, no worries, like all I do is train. And yeah, just kind of went through that for about 7 years till 2014. So just kept building my way through. And like at the time, I didn't hate it as such, because like not many people can say they can do that as a job, you know. And then yeah, just kind of went through like that, just one after the other, just rolled through. And I think my biggest year I felt was 2012, when it was running into Olympic Games, and there was obviously an opportunity for two British riders, and that was kind of the hardest time that I fought. Like there was a lot of pressure going out like around British Cycling, and you're in there getting thrown in the deep end. I don't even know how old I was, but like everything just felt like such a rush and like a pressured environment, that when I didn't get to go, the 2013 was the year that I just thought, I don't want to do this anymore. Like the pressure involved in being at the Olympics was so high that the enjoyment went out the window and the pay didn't matter anymore. So like I almost wanted a real life, and you know, go out drinking with your mates, like just a normal teenage life. So that was kind of the time that it switched in my head, and I thought, it's not something that I'm built to do mentally in that sense. Like I like having fun, and I just felt like the fun was getting sucked out of it at the top end, if you know what I mean, to be the best in the world. It wasn't a good time in my head.
Yeah.
So was the start.
Yeah. So what process did you go through then to work out what next, basically? So you're having a pretty successful XC career, got to the point where you feel it doesn't work for you. How did you kind of think about that and decide where to go next?
Yeah, I guess the biggest turning point in my riding, like there was a not high expectations, but like a lot of coaches, and especially like my dad, who was my biggest, he was an idol, but like he just wanted the best out of me, and I could feel that, and I didn't want to let him down. And he passed away in 2010. Mm-hmm. And I was still pretty young and I didn't know what to do, you know, like I just lost someone who was my coach, like just really big role in my life. And after that was like, I didn't want to leave my mum and my sister at home, but I had the opportunity to move to Manchester and be full time.
Right.
And like, that was kind of like I had to be like, make a big boy decision, you know, and I didn't want to let anyone down on either side. I was like, oh, mum, I don't want to go because I don't want to leave you here on your own. And then she was there pushing me to just at least try it. So I'm glad that she was willing to let me go and try it, and she obviously wanted the best for me. So then from then on, I kind of wanted to like give it everything. And like the year after he passed away was pretty hard because I was giving it everything, but I think just mentally I just had such a big hole in my life that it wasn't working out, and I was stressing. I was like, I'm putting everything into this and nothing's coming about. But then like a couple of years down the line, it kind of just started falling together, and like London Olympics were coming, and like it just felt like it was going so fast. And then when I didn't get, like, not that I was expecting to go to the Olympic Games, but like the fact that I was like sniffing, like it was nearly there sort of thing. And then like basically you don't go and you've done all that work and you're kind of like, oh, it's the end of the season now. So then 2013 was the switch where I thought, oh, well, like, what do I do now? Like, I've given it everything, and there's another 4 years. I don't think I can do another 4 years. So then the following year, I signed for Bart Brenchens, he was Olympic champ and bronze medalist, I think. And he just gave me a chance to, like, be away from British Cycling, but, like, still do the World Cups, if you know. So, like, I was still part of British Cycling, but he was the one. We were hanging out with him at the races, and he training camps or whatever, so it was a different environment just to see how it would go. And it was pretty good, to be fair. Like, it settled in pretty well, and it was a lot more relaxed because Olympics had finished and whatnot. And then 2013, there was like a eliminator series, so it's like eliminator sprint series, so it's basically like four cross but longer and on XC bikes. And then just he just entered me in one of them and the off chance, thinking like, see how it goes sort of thing. And I think I did quite well. And then that year I just ended up doing them all and won my first World Cup in May in 2013.
Nova Mesto, is that right?
Yeah, in Czech Republic. Yeah. And that kind of boosted my morale back up. So like that's probably the point where I thought, oh, maybe I can do it. Maybe I can like be good at something, you know? So I just kind of like grafted through 2013 thinking, oh, it's like a good time. And then before you know it, 2014, there's Commonwealth Games and you're like, oh, maybe I could represent Scotland at these game home games, you know? And then that's the drive I got back. So that's probably when I thought, nah, I can do this, like mentally back in the game sort of thing. So just decided I'd give it everything that I could to Commie Games, and then that would be my last XC race and I'd go and do something else, you know? Like, just thought if I give it everything again, then at least I tried and I wouldn't have any regrets.
Yeah, for sure. How did that go at the Commonwealth?
I think I was 10th in the end, but I remember it being a really hard race. I think I peaked about 3 days before the race.
Right.
So I struggled in the race. But nah, it was like, I felt good about it and it was my last race, so I kind of enjoyed it more than I thought I would.
Awesome.
Like the nerves were kind of gone and I was just like, yeah, it's just here for a good time and a big party.
Yeah, that's nice. So you'd already made the decision for cross country, but go out on a high. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, exactly. And like I spoke to Kenny Dunoon, who owns a car garage in Inverness, and basically he was my first sponsor when I was a juvenile. He bought my first bike. And he's always just sort of been like the male figure in my life. Like after my dad passed away, he was always the one like helping me make the decisions. And he just went, look, I'll help you out if you want to switch to the downhill. Like it's no problem. So he kind of like made my decision just easier. Like I just knew that I wasn't financially going to like run out of money or anything. He was just like, look, I know you can give it a shot and at least like know that you're not going to the minuses too much.
Yeah, cool. So I mean, you obviously went then to be a downhill privateer for a while, but I think you went with a plan. You didn't just go to be a privateer and see what happens. It feels like you were on a bit of a mission. Can you talk us through your approach to that and how you set up to get to where you are now?
Yeah, like so after Commie Games, obviously I had a few months out, and like the few months was kind of the time where I planned how I was going to do it. So obviously I entered the Scottish races and then just seen how I would get on in them without much riding in a sense, and like ended up living my teenage years at that time and like obviously going out at the weekends, drinking, parties, and then riding my bike for fun. And then yeah, just thought, right, I'm gonna have to come like get a job because like financially you can't live off nothing. So like spoke to a few people and Greg Williamson's dad helped me out and got me a job in his cafe. So just working in the cafe, and then you just get to meet people in the cafe, you know, like people who are interested in what you did before. Like a few people knew I did Commie Games, and obviously that kind of like made them have a bit of respect for me in the cafe, not thinking, oh, it's another dropout of uni sort of thing. So that was quite good that I had that backing in a sense, because it gave me a bit more confidence to like be good at a job rather than think, oh, this is rubbish, like why am I doing this, blah blah blah. Like I was there to make money to go racing. But then on the way you meet people. So then I met like my gym coach, which is strength and conditioning. He works in Bannatyne's in Inverness, so he just kind of got chatting to me and was like, oh, well, if you want any help in the gym, like give me a shout and we can just talk about it. So I was like, oh yeah, that's a good idea, because I've never really done a proper gym session before, like strength wise and then obviously for downhill you need to be strong. So it was good that I'd bumped into him in that like that time in the cafe, because now he still trains me in the gym and it's like just so helpful. Like it's just another mind to pick when you're pretty low or you don't know what's not working and what you need to get strong. So Hakan was a really good guy to bump into. So from then on I kind of just discussed with him like how are we going to do this, and then I had Kenny, who was financially backing me up and said, look, like, if you're short of money, like, we can help you out. Like, it's no problem as long as you get, as long as you're not worrying about, like, the last thing you need to worry about is financial, your financial stakes. That's a stress. So basically, we just figured out with a few people that, like, it was just mental, like, the mental side of things is basically you want to be comfortable, and then everything should follow. So, yeah, I guess in the winter, I just rode my bike a lot, did training, went to work, and just, it kind of just rolled through the winter really quickly because you're busy all day. So, like, I'd get up at 6 to do a gym session, go to work at, like, 10:30, come back, eat, maybe go on my bike if it's, like, in the summer, you know, and it just, each day just went so fast that it was, like, already race season in that sense. So, yeah, just, I guess the planning side of things, just, it wasn't, like, a structured plan. It just fell into place, like, quite naturally. And, like, obviously with the backing of cross country, I know how to work hard in training sessions. So I just always made sure that I would give 100% if I'm riding my bike, or have 100% worth of fun sort of thing. So it worked pretty good.
Yeah. And is it hard to be stress-free at a race as a privateer? Because, you know, you've got limited support, you've got a bike to look after. How did it feel?
Yeah, like, I wasn't sure because I've always had things done for me in cross-country. So I was kind of going in, like, not... My first World Cup was Fort William in 2015, I think. Yeah, 2015. And, like, it was super wet. And, like, obviously I'd, like, had... I did have tires from a, like, I had Sandy Rogers who helped me out with bike bits and that. So he was like helpful with bits of bike or mechanic my bike or whatever, like, away from the race. He wouldn't come to the race because he's got kids and, you know, like, busy. So it was kind of the first time I was working on my bike myself. And I was like, oh, this is a bit stressful. And, like, changing tires or it rains and you don't have roll offs because you have one set of goggles or, you know, like, Fort William was a massive learning curve for me because I was so underprepared with what would happen that I ended up crashing and not qualifying. And I snapped my chain and crashed. And then I was like, well, that's just down to me, like, having the stress all weekend of not having enough kit, not having enough shoes, you know, like, just bodging, everything was pretty bodged. So then that was the point where I thought, maybe I've made the wrong decision, like, maybe I've bitten off way more than I can chew sort of thing. And then ended up going to Leogang with some friends and yeah, managed to qualify there. And just, I don't know, that's when it sort of clicked. Like, I just knew the speed that you needed to qualify. And then, yeah, it was like a snowball effect. Like, once you know, once you're confident with the speed, like, qualifying isn't so much of an issue in that sense if you're mechanical free. And I think the biggest thing I've learned is, like, to be a everyone thinks to be a downhiller, you just go balls out from the top to the bottom. But that's, like, one way to just hurt yourself. You've kind of got to, like, ease into, like, know the track and not push, not go 100% the whole way because there's no way you can hold it. So I think that's something I learned in the, like, really quickly because I don't know, it's quite hard to explain in a sense, like, I guess, like, a good thing is, like, Minar, he's, like, that consistent just because he knows that he can ride at 90% and still win a World Cup, if you know what I mean. He just knows that speed and he knows whether he's going to win it or not. And I guess that's what I kind of learned pretty quick with qualifying. So I knew what speed it took to qualify. So you never go over it and never go under it. And it was pretty good to, that was the key thing I thought because, you know, like, the first year of World Cups, everyone's like, qualifying's the hardest thing, you'll be lucky to qualify at any World Cups this year, blah blah blah, and then put a doubt in your mind, but once you do it once, you know, and then you just kind of cancel what everyone else says. So I think having confidence in your riding is such a big thing.
Yeah, cool. So what advice would you give to privateers now then, based on what you learned in over those couple of seasons? What are the main things that helped you?
I think, like, if you have a job, like, it's good to be, like, really good to plan ahead, like, structure your days, because, like, it's so easy to, like, I felt like you'd come home from work and you'd be super tired and the last thing you want to do is go to the gym or go training. So like I always think like having a flexible job is pretty good in the fact that you can go in at like 10 o'clock because that gives you from like 7 till 9 to train. And I think that's pretty important. Like that's, I would say the key is like training when you're not, like it's easy to go into work tired because like I'm not going to lie, you don't have to give 100% in work. And like, yeah, some people claim they will, yeah, but if you want to be the best, if you want to be a full-time bike rider, that's obviously got to take priority.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, just plan your training sessions, plan your work around your training sessions in a sense. And yeah, just make sure you're prepared for the races. Like make sure you have the right tires and don't go to a race without having checked your bike, because the last thing you want to do is get there and something's broken, you know? And just kind of like on a notepad, just write all the times that's happened, like important things that happen from like training to when you're going to sort your bike out. Just like little things like that, just to stop your mind like thinking about something else. Because I think that's when you can make some silly mistakes. So I think if it's written down, you can't forget because you just glance. And I think that's probably the more important things, I think.
Cool. Yeah, it's good advice, I think. Because it's a pretty hectic weekend, even if you're just there to ride, there's a lot of things you have to remember to do, I guess. So if you're you're running your own team, as in effect, then that just adds more to your plate, I guess. So
yeah, definitely. Like from when sign-on opens and when you're going to sign on. And then do you have enough time to check your bike before sign on, or what you do after? You know, like just little things that will like rattle your head if you miss it or you're late. And then that has a knock on effect, you know?
Yeah. Cool. And how did the Polygon thing come about then? So that's, you know, it was an awesome move for you at the start of this season. How did that all come together?
Yeah, it was, I'm super buzzing on it now. Like basically just Mick Hanna came to Glencoe SDA a few years ago.
Yeah.
And it's the first time I've ever met him, and like we were at the top of the hill and I was an expert and he was like obviously an elite, and it was pretty cold, and just kind of got chatting to him at the top like before the runs, because I was like, oh, you're from Australia, aren't you? You must be freezing, because us Scots are freezing. Anyway, just sort of had a joke, and then yeah, that race ended up beating him somehow. I don't know, like I'm just saying that it's the weather, he wasn't used to it, you know. But yeah, and then after that just sort of like got chatting to him at the races, and like he's just such an open, down-to-earth guy that like you hear about it. He's been in the game for so long and like he just knows everyone, you know. And he was just like open to chat to this little half Scot, half Asian privateer from Scotland, you know. And he was like real sound about it, and yeah, I just sort of like got loads of respect from him in that sense, and he'd like just help me out. And then flew to Cairns last year with a few boys, and he was just like, oh, come with me and we'll go ride some local tracks and that. So yeah, that was real cool. So that's kind of how I like met him. And then just before Andorra, he was like, oh, there might be a space opening on our team and you'd be my first pick, would you be interested? I was just like, yeah, that'd be like amazing sort of thing. And that's just kind of how it came about. So I was so happy that it's worked out, to be fair.
And how are you settling in? Like, are you enjoying having all the nice things that a full factory team offers?
Yeah, like, I'm surprised in the sense that, like, I'm so used to being on a World Cup XE team, and it's so regimed and everything you have to be on, like, everything's just so, like, anal, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And then I'm on this team and it's so chilled and the atmosphere's chilled and like just everyone gets on and like no, you know, like not much drama and everyone's just happy to be riding the bikes, you know, like it's just like a holiday, if you know what I mean. So
awesome.
Yeah, it's just nice to be like for everyone to get on, and it's a pretty close team. And to drop in, I was like, I was a bit nervous at the races, like, because I'd never been to a World Cup with a team. I've always been on my own, so I'm like, what can you do, what can't you do? Or like I had a bit of stress at Fort William because I didn't know how each rider reacts, like are they really serious before the race? Or
yeah.
But like Mick, Tracy and Alex, you know, like super chilled and like no drama, so it's so good.
Excellent. And what are the things that you're finding really helpful? What's the weight that it's taken off you that's helped you concentrate more on your riding?
I think bike setup is got to be like the highlight, because like literally the bikes I had in the last few years, I'd car park test them, ride them, and then just kind of get used to it, you know?
Yeah.
Like never thought about changing the setup for the track, or, you know, just sort of went with it and just thought, oh, if I start like thinking about that, I'll just like mess my head up, you know? So then obviously having Mick and even Tracy, like she's really switched on with bike setup, and like, yeah, Mick's just, I just pick Mick's brains a lot on setup because he's done it for so long and he just knows like ins and outs of pretty much everything. So yeah, just being able to speak to him about how he's running his bike, and then I'll give it a shot, and then it'll just be night and day different to either like saving your arms or giving you more grip, you know. It's just each track's so different, so it's just been, yeah, such a massive eye-opener. And having testing with like the Sun Tour guys and stuff like that, it's just something I never thought I'd be able to do, and then I never thought I'd understand it, but just in the last 6 months and like understood it a lot, so it's quite good.
What sort of things has Mick recommended that's really helped you in your setup? What kind of things have you been focused on changing?
Well, I think hard, he says hard is fast. So basically, the more uncomfortable it is, the faster you're probably going. And that's been like the biggest struggle in my head, because I've been used to like, oh, I like a bit soft, just like easy on my body, you know? But then obviously you fall in the holes and like it's easier to skip over them, and that's kind of been the main thing that's like messed my head a bit, but makes sense at the same time.
Yeah, so is that a kind of a stiffer setting, less sag, as well as maybe faster rebound and things like that?
Yeah, it's basically, yeah, harder, faster, and then you'll just like come out the holes or carry good speed around the berms and that. And then obviously like when you, like the clock doesn't lie, so if you try it with like the timing or whatever, and it's always going to be quicker, I guess.
Yeah, so not the sort of bike you'd want to ride on a Wednesday night down the trails, but something that's quick on a race run.
Yeah, but it's weird because you kind of have to find the balance where you can hold on to it all weekend, you know? So like that's 3 days of riding.
Yeah.
But like still be comfortable enough. So it's like finding that fine balance, which has been a bit hard for me because I found the balance when I was in Queenstown and then like nailed myself and then like got to re-find it, like build back up on it, which is annoying.
Yeah. How's the season been going so far then? How do you feel about how your performance has gone and settling into the team? I know you've had a bit of an injury the last few weeks, but
yeah, like I thought it was going to be the best season to date, but then I got injured, and like I'm not gonna lie, it's been like the biggest struggle of a season for me, like a bit mentally, but obviously physically, just, I don't know, it's just been pretty tough to now, like, I got injured in Queenstown. Like, I was riding really well, and I could feel like I was riding a lot, like, way smoother and faster than I thought I ever would, you know? Just with all the bike time and setup and new team and new kit. And I was just so happy with everything, and then just did a stupid race and broke my collarbone and then got surgery, and then like the plate started to move, and like just everything seemed to like one after the other go wrong. And I was just like, I didn't know I could handle it. And I thought the more weeks I went into it, the more I'd think I can never be that fast again. And I don't want to go that fast again, or I don't want to fall off and break myself again. Like all these doubts and whatever. And then just went into Fort William thinking, oh, I'll just give it my best shot sort of thing and see. And it was like such a struggle of a weekend for me, but I did have a lot of fun at the same time. Like I probably wasn't riding fast or anything, but I just like really enjoyed myself, and that was kind of like when I like had a sigh of relief that I wasn't scared anymore, you know? Because like when you're sitting on the couch, it's easy to like psych yourself out and have all these doubts, but when you ride, you kind of forget everything, sort of slowly comes back together. But did finals, and I just felt like it was one too many runs, and like just felt, had a massive crash again, and damaged my knee, so that set me back again. So I think like the biggest thing I've learned from that is like you can think you're ready, but you're really not, because I think I rode my downhill bike once before Fort William World Cup and just kind of expected to do well, you know, in my head, but yeah, it's been the toughest pill to swallow. And then after Fort William, it was every weekend there was a race, so I was always away. So then, yeah, now I'm back here, so I'm just happy to get some time on the bike without a number board strapped to the front.
Excellent. And how's the knee now? Is it fully recovered or is it still on the way?
Well, I'm going to go see the physio tomorrow, but it's still swollen and it still hurts a bit, but not enough to stop me riding, if you know what I mean. Yeah. And it doesn't get any bigger with riding, so it's kind of just like a stagnant big lump on my knee.
Uh-huh. So something that you hopefully can iron out over the next few weeks or so and get ready for Mont-Saint-Anne.
Yeah, well it's annoying because I fly away to Colorado for the EWS in about a week. So I don't have long at home, yeah.
I was going to ask about that. I spotted your name on some EWS entries for later in the season. I wondered if that was going to happen or not.
Yeah, well, I was supposed to do the first couple, but obviously got injured, so they've decided I'm doing the last couple, which is interesting with not much training, but we'll see how it goes.
Excellent. Well, how do you feel about that then? Because obviously your XC background and the longer racing, the endurance side comes into play in something like that with the downhill skill that you've clearly got.
Yeah, like I am interested to see how it goes, but like I don't know, not to like diss enduro riders or anything, you know, but like I feel like I wouldn't go to enduro anytime soon, you know. I have like my goals in downhill, and like I'm not saying I'd fail if I just went straight to enduro, but in my head it would be a failure for me to just, because that's kind of the way it seems to go. People from XC and downhill go to enduro, and I want to be the guy that goes from XC to downhill and stays there.
That's good. So, it makes sense. Yeah, you've still got a lot to do in the downhill, a lot to prove to yourself and to other people, yeah. I guess.
And I think like another main thing for me is like until enduro's in the UCI and like there's rules and regulations, I'm not going to look into it too much, to be honest, because like, you know, like I'm not saying anyone's doping, but like you just never know in sport who's doing what, you know. There could be someone who comes 60th, but he could be doping, you know, you just don't know. So in that sense, I don't want to like go there until you know that it's like they're doing everything they can to have it clean.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. So what are the biggest differences for you from a training perspective then, moving from XC into the downhill side of things?
Less road riding, which I'm buzzing about. Because I'm sure I used to spend about 6 or 7 hours on the road bike every day. But now it's pretty bike. It's just bike orientated and strength. So obviously a lot more gym work than I used to do. And the riding's a bit shorter, but more intense.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously a lot of time on the downhill bike, so
yeah,
everything that I'm pretty happy with, to be fair. But I think the key is just riding your bike, and even Mick always says it, he just says just ride your bike, don't think about it, and it'll come. So just working slowly.
Cool. What areas of your body have you found that, you know, you've benefited from the most when you've built more strength? Because I would assume your legs are pretty strong from the XC side of things, but...
Yeah, like, the legs don't really... They do get tired eventually, but they hold me up pretty well. And it's not something I'd really worked on. Obviously, I go pedaling and that, but I wouldn't focus on squats and that as such, or sprinting. I was more... in the past few years thinking about my upper body and like core and shoulders, like back, chest, just to be able to hold on to a harder bike, which is going to go faster sort of thing. So, but I feel like the winter coming, I'm going to focus a lot more on everything again and just not miss anything out and just make sure I've got all the ground covered, and then got no excuses. Whereas this year I kind of just went to Queenstown and it was amazing, but like I feel like I can train a bit better at home.
Yeah. Okay, makes sense. We're getting close to the end of our time today. We've got a couple of questions that we've asked a lot of our other guests. So first one of those is, if you had to give some advice to either to your 16-year-old self or to other people at the age of sort of 15, 16 that are, you know, looking to get into racing or looking to progress through racing, what advice would you give?
think if I was 16, I'd probably say just ride your bike and just enjoy it. If you're enjoying it, you're going to do well. But if you stress about it, you're not. Or yeah, just ride it as much as you can and don't worry about anything else. Like, don't worry about the gym work or anything. Just play on every sort of bike you can just to develop the skill.
Cool. And the other one was, if you had £100, or if our guests had £100 to spend on something to help improve their performance on a bike, be that, you know, a book or a gadget or a bike component, what would you spend your money on?
Well, that's pretty interesting. I don't think I could buy many components with £100 these days.
That's
could
very
I?
True, yeah.
Am I still 16?
You can be as old as you want.
Oh, that's quite a tough one, £100. I'd probably say, I'd probably say like a suspension setup there.
Okay.
Can you get that for £100?
I don't know. I think there's a company in the UK called J-Tech that are doing it, I've heard of, but I'm not sure how much it costs.
Yeah, probably. Or like service my suspension.
Yeah.
That'll do.
Yeah. Yeah, because a lot
just
of
keep on top of that.
A lot of the suspension companies will give good advice on how to set stuff up if you provide like your weight and your riding style and that kind of stuff. So
yeah, I'd probably go with that, I think.
Yeah, good answer. Thank you. So if people want to find out a bit more about you and follow you throughout this season and onwards, where can they find you on social media?
Instagram and Facebook.
And what's your
two main ones, I think?
Is it at
just Kenta Gallagher?
Kenta Gallagher.
Yeah.
Cool. Nice one. All right, well, thanks for your time today. Really appreciate it. Look forward to seeing how you get on through the rest of the season. Hope the injury woes are over and done with. And be really good to see how you get on.
No, thanks very much.
Cool. Nice one. Cheers, man.
Perfect.
Well, that's it for episode 14. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did and you've got a couple of minutes, then head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. It really helps other people find the podcast, which is what we want to do. Okay, we'll be back on the 8th of August with another great guest. But until then, get out and ride.